Hi, this is Tuesday. It is July 11th, and this is Kathy bringing you the news from Vermilion County, mostly from the commercial news, but a few from also from the News Gazette. So starting with the commercial news on first page, Committee to Act on South Street Work by Jennifer Bailey. Aldermen tonight will consider approving a contract for South Street and Walnut Street improvements. The $896,549 contract is with Foots Contractors of Paris. Foots was the low bidder of five bids. City officials have determined the need to resurface South and Walnut Streets from Main to Jackson Streets. The work will also include removal and replacement of lighting with LED fixtures, replacement of deteriorated concrete medians, curb and gutter, entrance consolidation, and safety enhancements. The city's gas tax funding is paying for the construction. Danville Engineering and Urban Services Director David Schnell said the project extends from Main Street at the David S. Palmer Arena to past the Public Safety Building to the railroad tracks. Schnell said there will be lighting reduction and replacements along the street. There is an excess of streetlights along that route. We're reducing those to a normal number, Schnell said. Streetlights cost the city about $300,000 annually in the street's budget. Danville Public Works Director Doug Ahrens also has said that LED conversions have continued with grant money and have decreased costs for the city. As part of the South Street work, the traffic lanes and amount of pavement the city has to maintain will be reduced. The project also includes pedestrian improvements and bicycle accommodations. Schnell said it's time to resurface the street, and the city also is forced by state law to look at Americans with Disabilities Act accommodations. The concrete work will address ADA accommodations, and the street also has a dilapidated center median with the concrete falling apart. Also tonight, the committee will consider, number one, authorizing a $25,457 payment to Stark Excavating for emergency sanitary sewer repairs underneath 611 North Oak Street. According to city officials, a sanitary sewer failure occurred under the Snyder Building. Funding comes from the city's sanitary sewer fund resulting from emergency storm sewer repairs near Vermilion, Jackson, Raymond, and Conran Streets. According to the resolution, a deteriorated storm sewer section was identified. The city's Public Works Department, with assistance from contractors, including Midwest Asphalt, analyzed and investigated the situation, resulting in disconnections from the line that runs underneath at least four homes and other structures, rerouting connections which required additional excavations and pavement removals. Funding comes from the city's Streets Division budget. Approving the Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report, called CAPER, for program year 2016. The report outlines Community Development Block grant-funded activities. A public hearing on CAPER is part of the meeting. And also on the front page, Class Grabs Children's Attention by Carol Rome. It might have been a Monday morning, but instructor Mallory Yankunis and her science experiments captured the attention of the children participating in her College for Kids class at Danville Area Community College. Yankunis is STEM-related, which stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics class. What's the Matter with Matter is one of 36 classes being offered this week for 3rd through 8th graders during the week-long College for Kids program. Leslie Sconce, who works in the Corporate and Community Education Division, said, "What's the Matter with Matter?" is one of several classes that is new this year, including Clativity, Food Science, Magic 101, and Paper Isn't Flat Anymore. She said 117 children are participating in 3-week-long College for Kids experiences this week, which ends Friday. Back in Yankunis' classroom, the children were encouraged to write down their predictions before each science experiment in an interactive notebook that used colorful paper foldouts to explain basic definitions of states of matter, such as solids, liquids, and gases. The first experiment involved stretching a balloon over the ridge on the neck of a plastic bottle filled with pop. "Write down what you think will happen," Yankunis told the kids. 10-year-old Eric Davis watched as the balloon began to inflate by itself. "Gas is filling the balloon," Eric said. The children then vigorously shook the pop bottles until the balloon started to deflate as the carbonation died out and the pop went flat. "Mine won't blow up anymore," Eric said with a tinge of disappointment. The next science experiment had explosive results when Yankunis tried it in her Mead Park Elementary School classroom last year. "What do you think will happen if I add baking soda to vinegar?" she said to the youngsters. "How much should I put in?" Some of the children were familiar with the experiment or already knew what to anticipate. "All of it," Noah Brumfield, 9, told Yakunis, who had a large box of baking soda. Yakunis started by pouring 1/8 of a cup of baking soda into a plastic bottle with vinegar and stretching a balloon over the neck. "What do you think's going to happen if I double the amounts of baking soda and vinegar?" she asked. 10-year-old Teresa Law guessed, "It's going to blow up more than this." Yakunis explained, "The chemicals in the baking soda and the chemicals in the vinegar create a gas." Yakunis has many more science experiments planned the rest of the week, including dissolving borax in water to create crystals, making oobleck from cornstarch and water, and shooting off water rockets on Friday. Across the hall at Dax Bremer Center, Katie Keitzman and Samantha Donovan laid out fabric squares they had cut from a pattern earlier in the morning in the Sew You Part 2 class. "They had to cut out 36 pieces today," said instructor Joanne Bibb, who is a retired Rossville teacher. "They're making a 9-patch quilt wall hanging." The 8 children in the sewing class, who are 5th graders and older, have more advanced sewing skills. Katie said she quilted a pillow last year while Samantha had sewn an apron and learned some sewing techniques from family members. College of Kids, which started in 1980, provides children with educational opportunities during the summer months and helps them to grow accustomed to life on a college campus. The goal of the summer enrichment program is to provide fresh and fun subject matter to motivate children and keep them challenged and active during the summer months. College for Kids provides hands-on, in-depth exploration in specialized fields of knowledge, opportunities for children to reach levels of intellectual stimulation that exceed those acquired in the regular classroom setting, and challenging experiences and necessary tools to develop special interests in the subject areas offered. Retired teachers, and college-age students who are majoring in elementary education lead the activities. And in page 2, Hoopston to inspect water storage tanks by Carol Hicks. Hoopston water storage tanks will be inspected on Wednesday, as well as July 17th and 31st, as part of the 3-year warranty covering the water tank storage project. The ground storage tanks and water tower were refurbished, cleaned, and painted during the project, which started in 2014. Warranty inspections include draining the tanks, checking for problems, fixing any problem that shows up, refilling the tanks, then retesting the water safety levels. According to Steve Baker, Water and Sewer Department Superintendent, the aerator tank will be examined on Wednesday and back in service by Friday, and the ground storage tank will be tested on July 17th. The water tower will be drained and inspected on July 31st. Baker said the inspections may cause additional rust in the water systems, adding it's likely the rust will increase with the drainage of the water tower. The effects of the inspection should be minimal, he added. Man accused of home invasion found unfit for trial. A 20-year-old man accused of beating up a senior citizen in April of last year during a Tilton home invasion was found unfit to stand trial on Thursday. According to Vermilion County Court records, a fitness hearing held Thursday before Judge Thomas O'Shaughnessy found that Tyron C. Wilson of Danville was unfit to stand trial. A status hearing was set for September 8th. Wilson faces charges of home invasion, causing great bodily harm, home invasion with a dangerous weapon, armed robbery with a firearm, possession of a firearm with a revoked FOID card, and aggravated battery causing great bodily harm to a person 60 years or older. He was arrested on April 14th last year after allegedly breaking into 2 homes in a Tilton apartment complex, threatening one 88-year-old female resident and attacking an 86-year-old male, and engaging in a brief standoff with Vermilion County Sheriff's deputies. At the time, Sheriff's Captain Mike Hartshorn said the Tilton police were initially dispatched to the Coachlight Trailer Park in reference to an armed person that entered a residence. As they arrived, a suspect identified as Wilson fled the scene on foot and ran to an apartment building in the 1000 block of Glendale Street, entering the residence of an 88-year-old woman. Hartshorn had said Wilson threatened the woman and attempted to rob her, but she was able to escape out of the back door of her apartment. Wilson then broke through the wall into the apartment unit next door, attacked the 86-year-old male resident, and took him hostage. The senior suffered cuts to his head and face during the incident and was later transported by medical personnel to an area hospital. Wilson refused to exit the apartment when law enforcement arrived, but a sheriff's department negotiator was able to contact Wilson by phone and facilitate a peaceful surrender. During his arraignment, Wilson pleaded not guilty to the 5 charges filed against him, including 2 Class X felony charges. In February of this year, his public defender successfully motioned to appoint a psychiatrist. Then on June 14, Special Prosecutor Tom Brown motioned to appoint a second psychiatrist. Both motions were approved by Judge O'Shaughnessy, who is scheduled to hear Wilson's status hearing in September. The next headline reads, Danville man caught with child porn to serve 17 years. A previously registered sexual predator living in Danville was sentenced Friday to serve 17 and a half years in prison for receiving and possessing child pornography. According to a press release Monday from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Central District of Illinois, John F. Gurna, 52, of the 2400 block of Cedar Street, was sentenced to more than 17 years in prison, plus 15 years of supervised release, before U.S. District Judge Colin S. Bruce. Gurna entered a guilty plea on March 6th to a charge of receiving child pornography between 2014 to 16 and for possessing child pornography in June of 2016. He was arrested by the U.S. Marshals Service on June 15th of last year and has since remained in their custody. According to court documents, when Gurna was arrested on federal charges, he was registered as a sex offender as a result of a prior conviction for aggravated criminal sexual homeland security investigations. According to court documents, when Gurna was arrested on federal charges, he was registered as a sex offender as a result of a prior conviction for aggravated criminal sexual abuse of a minor. The case was prosecuted by U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson, and it was investigated by the Champaign Police Department and the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Homeland Security Investigations. The case was brought as a part of Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative to combat the growing epidemic of child sexual exploitation and abuse. The project, launched in May 2006 by the Department of Justice, and it's led by the Attorney's Office Criminal Division, Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section. Project Safe Childhood marshals use federal, state, and local resources to better locate, apprehend, and prosecute individuals who exploit children via the Internet, as well as to identify and rescue the victims, the release stated. For more information about Project Safe Childhood, please visit www.projectsafechildhood.gov. And now turning to the obituaries for today. From Ridge Farm, Gerald Earp. Gerald L. Earp, 69, of Ridge Farm, died at 3:20 p.m. Thursday, July 6th in Indianapolis. A celebration of life for the Army veteran will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday at Wayne Blakeney Building at Ward Park, Ridge Farm. Roar Vet Funeral Services is in charge of the arrangements. And Angel Turner in Danville. Angel L. Turner, 57, of Danville, died at 2:12 a.m. Saturday, July 8th, at Presence Covenant Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at Roar Vet Funeral Services in Tilton. From Indianola, June Craig. June Craig, 95, longtime area educator and antique dealer, passed away at 12:45 a.m. on Friday, July 7th, at home, along with her husband, Hoot. Public visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 13th, at the Catlin Church of Christ. Private family graveside rites will be conducted at Woodlawn Cemetery in Indianola. Memorials may be made to the Woodlawn Cemetery Association or the Carroll Township Fire Protection District. Robeson Chapel in Catlin is handling the arrangements. And her husband, Harold Hoot Craig, 91, well-known longtime operator of Craig's Dairy Farm, also passed away at 12:45 on Friday, July 7th, with his wife. And his visitation will be at the same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, July 13th, at the Catlin Church of Christ. Paul W. Miller, Sr. from Cayuga, Indiana. Paul W. Miller, Sr., 82, of Cayuga, passed away at 5:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight, Sunday, July 9th, at the Waters of Covington in Covington, Indiana. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Wednesday, July 12th, at Diverter Funeral Home in Cayuga. Officiating Jack Holycross. Burial will be in the McHenry Cemetery in rural Georgetown. Visitation is 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Tuesday, July 11th, at the funeral home. Robert Gagnon, Jr. Robert, also known as Bob Joseph Gagnon, Jr., 76, of Catlin, passed away peacefully on July 7, 2017. There will be a procession leaving from Vermilion Regional Airport at 1 p.m. Tuesday, July 12th, with a full military burial taking place at the National Cemetery in Danville at 2 p.m. A memorial reception will take place immediately following at the Catlin American Legion. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center has been entrusted with Bob's arrangements. In lieu of flowers, donations in Bob's memory can be made to the Cross Point Women's Shelter in Danville, the Vermilion County Animal Shelter Foundation, and the Marine Corps Toys for Tots. All of these organizations were very dear to Bob and close to his heart. Ruth Reeser from Naperville. Ruth Eldon Reeser, 98, of Naperville and formerly of Charleston, passed away on Wednesday, July 5th at the Edwards Hospital in Naperville. A private graveside service was held for her immediate family at noon on Saturday, July 8th at the Roselawn Cemetery in Charleston. Ruth was a graduate of Danville High School and furthered her education at the Eastern Illinois University. That's all of the obituaries we have for today. This headline says, Marshals arrest shooting suspect in Chicago. A 24-year-old Georgetown man was arrested Sunday for allegedly shooting a bicyclist in the Danville Holiday Hills area. Latron Y. Cross, 24, of Georgetown, was arrested early Sunday morning in connection with the fatal shooting of Danville's Ollie G. Williams, Jr., 27, according to a press release from the Director of Public Safety, Larry Thomason. A warrant for Cross was issued by the Vermilion County State's Attorney for aggravated battery with a firearm on July 7th, with bond set at $500,000 with a 10% bond. Thomason said in a release, detectives have been searching for Cross and working with the U.S. Marshals Task Force since Friday. Cross was located by U.S. Marshals early Sunday in Chicago and was taken into custody without incident. He also said that State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey was to seek in court Monday charges of first-degree murder and personal discharge of a firearm against Cross. Thomason added the man's return to Danville is unknown at this time. Williams was shot in the lower torso about 1 p.m. Friday while riding a bike in the 1400 block of Eastview Avenue, and officers then found him lying beside the road. Police were told by the victim a vehicle pulled up to him and he was shot at several times. He died before 7 p.m. Friday at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. In the Sunday press release, Thomason again emphasized that the shooting was not a random act and that Mr. Williams was targeted. Oh, back to the subject of summer camps. Sounds like our kids have lots of opportunities to learn this summer. Youngsters dive into science camp by Carol Rome. Several dozen children have been learning about a deep subject, the ocean, for the past 2 weeks at science camps at the Boys and Girls Club and the Danville Family YMCA. Beth Chamberlain, a chemistry and physics teacher at Danville High School, said the purpose of this year's Into the Blue camp is to show children how exciting science can be. The science camp has been a summer activity for the last 15 years in Danville. The camp's co-directors are Mackenzie Zarn and Serenity Porter. Both Danville High School graduates and Danville Area Community College students. 50 children in 2nd through 8th grade participated in the camp in its first week at Boys and Girls Club. At the Y this week, 40 school-aged children participated in many different activities with an oceanography theme. Some of the activities during the camps included constructing a boat out of recycled materials and racing it, making coral reefs, ocean slime, mermaid soap, and octopus ink, tasting food and beverages the children would find near the ocean, building a bridge, and making an erupting volcano. Chamberlain said that youngsters sampled coconut, coconut milk, pineapple, mango, and even the more exotic freeze-dried squid, seaweed, and saltwater. Some of them thought the squid tasted like jerky, she said. The mango and pineapple were big hits. On a nearby table were dozens of cups with colorful liquid in them left over from Wednesday's project. A couple of the cups had a crystal-like crust forming around the rim. To make these coral reefs, we use laundry bluing, salt, and ammonia, Chamberlain explained. It will look like cauliflower. The young scientists also made slime and mermaid soap, which Chamberlain described as a bath bomb on Wednesday. Addison Hensold, her sister Gwen, and Brooklyn Warfield all compared their mermaid soaps. Mine smells like oranges, Brooklyn said of her blue soap. Mine smells like mint, Gwen said, holding out her green soap. On Thursday, two interns from Watchfire joined several camp helpers who were college and high school students to work with the youngsters on figuring out what objects sink or float in a bowl of water. Some of the objects, including plastic beads and pennies, were put inside small clear canisters, which were meant to replicate a submarine and then placed in the water. "We're making submarines to see if they float," Andrew Zong, a 3+1 Danville Area Community College student, said. "It's pretty fun, and the kids like it too." Brooklyn discovered right away what floats and what sinks. "If you put less things in the boat, it floats," she said. "I learned if you put a penny in the canister, there's air in there too, and it will float." Brooklyn, who attends Northeast Elementary Magnet School, said she also applied what she learned about hot air balloons as a third grade student in Jessica Allier's class, who are the student ambassadors for next weekend's Balloons Over Vermilion. At another table, Sushi Balthazar, a DHS senior, talked to the children about starfish, sand dollars, clams, lobster traps, and seagulls as the youngsters ran their hands through two open containers of sand. "Do you know what it means when you see a lot of seagulls?" Boss Bar asked. Camper Brandon Geddes exclaimed that fish are nearby. "Today the campers will learn that the depths of the ocean aren't all the same color, and they will take home a t-shirt they tie-dyed with laundry blueing as well as a science goodie bag." The camp is sponsored by Vermilion Advantage, Aqua Illinois, Boys and Girls Club, CarMac Car Capital, Danville Family YMCA, FiberTech, International Greenhouse Company, Meyer, Rivas Industries, and Watchfire. Program seeks mentors for schools in West Central Indiana. Fountain County, Indiana has a youth leadership mentoring program in all three school corporations. TALKS stands for Transferring a Little Knowledge Systematically. TALKS Leadership Mentoring Program is a structured approach to sharing wisdom gained through life experiences with young people. Oftentimes when we hear the word mentoring, we think of an at-risk or troubled kids that need extra help, Kathy Walker, program director, said in a release. The TALKS program is not for at-risk youth, but rather all youth, because all youth have leadership potential. An adult mentor is matched with three students of the same gender. The group then begins meeting once a week at the school during the school day. The structure protects both the youth and the adult. Background checks are conducted as required by each school corporation. The TALKS program uses a content-based, issue-oriented curriculum that discusses topics such as self-discipline, the power of positive attitude, rejection, and peer pressure. All mentors receive training and a mentor guidebook to aid them in conducting their weekly sessions. TALKS is in place at Attica Elementary, Covington Elementary, Covington Middle School, Southeast Fountain Elementary, and Fountain Central Junior High. Mentors follow their three students through the school system, so as the students move up in grade level, the mentor follows along. The curriculum changes at the junior high middle school, our seventh grade. TALKS is structured to begin at the elementary school level, so new volunteer mentors are generally matched with third or fourth grade students. The program is recruiting new mentors in an effort to start more groups at the elementary level. For information about the TALKS program, contact Walker at 765-793-4881. TALKS is administered by the Community Action Program of Western Indiana. Committee discusses Bowman Corridor Study by Jennifer Bailey. Cell phone data is being used as part of an origin and designation study for the Bowman Avenue Corridor Study. Danville Area Transportation Study Technical Committee members discussed the project at their Thursday meeting. "We're using some new technology, which is kind of creepy. It's a company called Streetlight," Danville Engineering and Urban Services Director David Schnell also told Danville City Council aldermen recently. Travel location data is being purchased for about $5,000 to monitor about 15 to 20 locations. It's all through cell phone data to see where traffic is coming and going, when traffic hits certain stoplights, Schnell said. He said the data will provide statistical average information to use to estimate origin destinations. Big Brother is watching you whether you know it or not, said Janet Payonk, Vermilion County Highway Design Engineer. The Bowman Avenue Corridor Study is to identify issues and opportunities along the Bowman Avenue Corridor from Interstate 74 to the northern limits of the Metropolitan Planning Area. It's to identify corridor improvements to support economic growth to existing developed and underdeveloped areas and future growth areas. The study also is to evaluate east-west connections and needed improvements, determine the potential for Illinois Route 1 traffic congestion relief, and evaluate the impact on residential and commercial areas along Route 1 from Interstate 74 to West Newell Road. Schnell said the first year's work was about collecting data. Public and community involvement is expected later this year, as officials now explore a couple different concepts and alternatives. At the committee's Thursday meeting, members recommended approving a 2018-21 transportation improvement program that now goes to the DATS Policy Committee next week. Danville Area Transportation Study Technical Committee Chairman Doug Stasky also talked about the upcoming West Newell Road project. Construction should start fairly soon, he said, adding there may have to be a full road closure for a few days. The West Newell Road Surface Improvement Project is from Denmark Road east to Illinois Route 1. Stasky has said that the roadway has seen increased traffic and that the county wants to address the deteriorated pavement with a rehabilitated driving surface. A Catlin-Homer Road Bridge project will see one-lane traffic. Final design on the Denmark Road project, Schnelly reports, also is being completed. He said the options still being looked at for the intersection of Denmark Road, Logan Avenue, and Winter Avenue are a roundabout or leaving it as it is. There will be another public meeting. The project, which the city is seeking Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program funding for, would include sanitary construction along Denmark Road from the Danville Country Club to Logan Avenue and along Old Ottawa Road from Denmark Road, west 1/4 mile to the east side of Chateau Estates and along part of Rubienville on the south side of Chateau Estates. There would be widening and resurfacing of Denmark Road while adding curb and gutter, new paved shoulders, bike lanes, and a pedestrian sidewalk on the south side, in addition to the pedestrian bridge across the lake. Old Ottawa Road improvements will include resurfacing, including curb and gutter. The curve between Rue Bienville and Denmark Road will be removed. And a little bit of sports news. Dans want to extend the winning streak by Chad Dare. The Danville Dans manager, Eric Coleman, has been seeing the pieces of his puzzle start to come together for the 2017 Prospect League season. Halfway through the 60-game schedule, it appears that everything is finally falling into place. Danville completed a winning streak with a 13-8 victory over the Springfield Sliders on Sunday afternoon at Robin Roberts Field in Springfield. The victory is the fourth consecutive for the Dans, who stand at 18-17, and it moves the team over the 500 mark for the first time since an 11-8 win over Lafayette on June 3rd. "We always talk about winning the week, and we were able to do that with four straight wins this weekend," Coleman said. "I think we're pitching it better, and our offense remains to be one of the best in the league. Hopefully, we've got everything clicking at the right time." With three straight wins over Springfield, a doubleheader sweep on Saturday, and the win on Sunday, Danville is now just 2 games out of first in the Prospect League's West Division. Lafayette leads at 20-15, and the Dans are just one game behind the Sliders, 19-16, for second place and a playoff berth. "This season there is no first-half, second-half winner," Coleman said. "It's just the top two teams in each division makes the playoffs. I'm kind of wishing now that we did have the first half scenario, because we would be 4-1 in the second half, but that's not the way it's set up. I still think we're in really good position to not only make the playoffs, but win the division." Coleman feels that way because Danville still has 3 games, all at home, left with Lafayette and the Dans, and the Sliders still have 7 meetings left, but only 2 left in Danville. "We've just got to take care of our business, and we will be fine," Coleman said. And that starts tonight at home against Springfield. Danville and Springfield will compete an unusual 4-game series at 6:30 p.m. tonight at the Danville Stadium. It's $2 Tuesday with a $2 admission, $2 hot dogs, $2 sodas, and $2 Busch Lights. The Dans had 3 different players drive in 3 runs on Sunday. James Govern went 3-for-6 with 3 RBIs. Chris Colarossi went 1-for-3 with his first home run of the summer and 3 RBIs. And cleanup hitter Michael Rothman broke out of his slump with a 2-for-4 performance, including his team-leading 9th home run and 3 RBIs. Rothman had been 6-of-33 for 182 since hitting his 8th homer of the season on June 22nd against Quincy. "It's nice to get to the middle part of the lineup driving in runs," Coleman said. Govern and Rothman are key cogs in that production. Coleman also pointed out that Danville stole 7 bases on Sunday, bringing the season total up to 99. And that's all we have for today. This is Kathy. I've been reading for you from the Vermilion County News, from the Commercial News, and the News Gazette. You have a good day.